You're listening to The Zen Crystal Show, episode 18. How do you define success when it comes to online courses? Let's find out. Welcome to The Zen Crystal Show, the show for online course creators who care about building actionable, meaningful, and profitable online courses. If you're a solo entrepreneur, tech geek, or creative, The Zen Crystal Show is the place to get expert advice for creating your online course, overcoming overwhelm, and growing a balanced business. To get the full experience, sign up at zencourses.co, where you'll get access to free lessons, resources, and more. Again, that's zencourses.co. You know who it is. It's your host, Janelle Allen. Listen, I had to take a moment to introduce this interview because when I recorded this interview with Brennan Dunn, I wasn't sure, if I'm gonna be completely honest, it was a little bit different from other interviews that I had done for the show, and I wasn't sure how it would be received. But I was confident. I said, you know what, I'm just gonna go back and listen to it like I always do. I always listen to my shows before I publish them for you. And I'm so glad I did, because this is one of the most special, valuable, insightful interviews that has been on the show to date. Brennan drops so much value and knowledge and expertise that I want you to do one thing for me. Listen all the way through. Listen to the whole interview. If you have to split it up in two or three listens, do what you have to do. But make sure you stay until the end to learn how Brennan's one of the most analytical people I know, and he takes action on that analysis, on that data, and then he turns around and teaches it to other people. So listen to the whole thing and listen to the outro, because I'm gonna try something new this week. I'm going to highlight the key elements in the episode to just bring it on home for you and recap. Okay, let's get into it. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Zen Crystal Show. Today I am thrilled and honored to chat with Brennan Dunn. Brennan needs no introduction, but you might know him from his site, doubleyourfreelancing.com, where he helps freelance consultants grow their businesses. Brennan, welcome to The Zen Crystal Show.
Thanks, Janelle.
So is there anything you want to add to that intro? Can you tell us more about yourself and the work you do? The good stuff.
So I think like most freelancers, I was sort of inadvertently ended up as a freelancer. So I had a full-time job in Miami. I was working at a pretty large agency and I was doing very well. And then, wouldn't you know, my wife got pregnant and she wanted to move up to Virginia, where I knew no businesses. I didn't know anyone up here or anything. So I had to, you know, I couldn't continue working remotely. I couldn't work remotely for the company I was at. So I ended up finding a few people who I knew mainly through college, who knew people who had businesses and needed help and everything else. So I started just doing kind of like freelance development without really knowing what freelancing was. That makes sense?
Yeah.
And eventually I got a good amount of referrals, and I got to this kind of crossroads where I could either turn work away or backlog it, which I didn't know how to do at the time, or something like that, or I could grow. I could add more people to my team. So I decided to grow and eventually got the company to about a dozen employees. And we had a really nice office downtown. And obviously there was a lot of stuff in between that, but I grew the company to about a dozen people and decided that I wanted to start a software company. So I started this company called PlanScope, which is still around. It's a project management software suite for freelancers and agencies. And wouldn't you know, a lot of the support tickets that should have been about like, this broke, or how do I do this, or whatever else, they were asking me things like, how do I get clients? Or do you have any advice on pricing? Or stuff that I was like, this is a little out of scope, right? Like this has nothing to do with project management software. But I realized a lot of people were canceling because of those questions going unanswered. Like if somebody didn't have any more clients, they would cancel because they didn't have any need for the software anymore. So it was at that time that I kind of spun off, really on accident, this training business, which is really where I'm known nowadays, where I've created a number of courses that have all really just been responses to the questions I was getting from, well, at first PlanScope customers and then subscribers and audience members and kind of this new endeavor that I've been on the last few years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, I've been doing the training thing for about 4 years now. And I've got, and I know we'll talk about this in depth, but I've got two courses I'm offering currently. And it's doing very well and it's growing. And yeah, I mean, everything's pretty awesome when it comes to it. So
very cool. Very cool. So I am going to have a sidebar moment. And this is the first sidebar moment I've ever had on Zen courses. So, you know, don't take this lightly. I'm going to say on air that I personally have learned a ton just from your free articles. So I just want to say thank you for all that you do. It's been truly, truly helpful and valuable.
Awesome. I'm honored. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. So let's have some fun and help people get to know a little bit about you. I've got five quick questions for you. You ready for this?
Go for it.
Okay. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird. Okay. I'm usually in bed by 10.
Other than coffee, what's one thing that gets you going each morning?
I think it's going to sound weird, but taking the kids to school. Mm. Odd, but, you know, just getting out of the house because I work from home, just actually driving a car and leaving the home. It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. I work from home too. I get it. Okay, so finish the sentence. If I weren't doing the line of work I am now, I'd be blank.
An actual author. And by that, I mean, not writing business books, but doing stuff like writing like real books, like probably teaching philosophy at a college or writing.
Interesting.
Yeah, I went to school for the classics. So I'm really, that's my thing. But it's what I do on my off time is I'm a geek out on that stuff.
I love it. You geek out on like Latin and classics. That's cool.
Exactly. I'm great. Yeah.
Okay. So what is the scariest thing you've ever experienced?
Business-wise or in general?
You can pick one.
Business-wise, well, let me do business just because I can't think of anything personal. I mean, there's kid stuff, but you know, I can't pinpoint anything. But business-wise, scariest thing by far would have been when we had a client who booked about half of our team. And they were paying the bills and everything was going well. But then we were invoicing net 30. So they had 30 days to pay their bills and we invoiced them every 2 weeks. So, you know, there could be two invoices out at any given time. Well, they defaulted on their first, or not their first. I mean, we'd been working with them for a few months. So they defaulted on an invoice. I called up the client and he was like, yeah, by the way, we meant to tell you, Brennan, but we have run out of money, unfortunately. So we can't pay you, but we are working on getting new investors now. And, you know, I'd heard that before. I mean, on a more so from people who had never raised money, right? Like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm talking to investors, which doesn't mean anything. But anyway, they owed us about $110,000. And this is money that at that point I knew I would never see. And I had, you know, I mean, my payroll was six figures. So I was kind of dependent on that to pay the bills. So I had no line of credits or anything like that. And savings wasn't sufficient to match that deficit. So yeah, I was like, oh my, like the whole world's about to explode. Fortunately, what bailed me out was I had a good friend who also had an agency, a little better probably than me at saving when it came to his, and he had a much bigger business. So he helped me float that. But anyway, because, you know, if it was just me, I'd be like, okay, I'll just like ignore my mortgage payment or something and hopefully I don't get evicted. But, you know, I was paying people who depended on me to pay their bills, right? Like these are people who maybe like quite a few of them were the only person working in their family. Like, let's say their wife didn't work or, you know, was raising their kids or whatever. Like that was really uncomfortable to me. I don't know if scary is the right word, but it was scary. I mean,
it was scary.
So, and it kind of blindsided me. It wasn't like a gradual, oh my gosh, we're running out of all client. Everything seemed great. Like up until that phone call. So yeah,
definitely.
That was a big learning experience for me.
I bet. So last question for all the geeks out there, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Okay.
I've always been a Trekkie.
That did not take long. I thought you were going to be like, oh, I don't know, but you were just Star Trek. No,
I've been asked that before. I was actually just asked that recently by somebody because the new movie's coming out.
Yep.
And somebody asked me that, and I was pretty quick. I've actually been to a Star Trek convention. I met Robert Picardo. That was that was back when like Voyager was on, and I thought it was awesome.
Anyway. Real deal. Okay. So one of the things I love about your story is just the trajectory of your growth is just very relatable. You started as an employee, went on to become a freelancer, own an agency. What was your journey like? You talked about, how you started it, but why did you decide to become an entrepreneur?
I mean, I had grown up in an entrepreneurial family where my grandfather was a truck driver, and he had, being good Irish Catholics, they had like 8 kids and they were all boys, and meaning they were all very competitive. And, my dad was really the only one out of the group, of the kids who ended up actually becoming quote unquote successful. So he started up a business and, he had employees, and like half of his brothers were working for him, which it wasn't that really appealed to me. But what did appeal to me was growing up, I played baseball. I played, I did like the thing that I think every kid does, baseball, soccer, all that kind of stuff. And growing up, both my parents were able to come to all of my practices and all of my games and everything like that, where a lot of the other people that I played with, one or both of their parents even, never came because they were working or something like that, So I knew that, especially if I was going to have kids, which I did before I became an entrepreneur, or at least we got pregnant before I became an entrepreneur. I knew I wanted to make things work so that I could do something. I could end up having a life like that. Cause I've always looked at running a business as, obviously you're delivering hopefully a tremendous amount of value to your customers, but at the end of the day, it's a means to an end. For me, at least, it's a means to an end. So that end for me is getting to spend time with my family and getting to see them. And I mean, one of the issues I had with my agency, which is probably what prompted me to look into starting a software company, was I had created this company with an office, and I'd go in from 9 to 6 every day, and I'd come home and either my girls would be already in bed or be about to be in bed. And that was, at some point I realized, wow, I'd created a job for myself.
Yeah.
I could have done things. I mean, look, in retrospect, I could have done things differently, so it wouldn't have ended up like that, but still could have had that agency. But, since I went into things blind, that's kind of inevitably what came out.
So is that why you made the switch from the agency to doing more products? And well, I guess what I'm really asking is, where did doubleyourfreelancing.com come into play?
Okay. So at first, as I mentioned, I was getting all these questions from the support channel of PlanScope. And one of the issues with SaaS software as a service, is it's predictable, which is a good thing, right? I mean, I was just starting out. I had a bunch of money saved up from having built this multimillion-dollar company. But I was building up this company that everything else was in savings, and I was living off of the income of the SaaS. Well, the issue is, since it's predictable, that means it doesn't tend to waver all that much. And there's a conference I really wanted to attend in Ireland, a business conference. And it just was, I couldn't budget it. Like it didn't fit into the SaaS thing. So I was talking to a friend of mine, Amy Hoy. I don't know if you know her, but she had said, hey, you've been like talking with people about pricing. You've written blog posts about it. You have this kind of weirdish small audience of people who are kind of interested in the stuff you have to write. Why not do an ebook on how to price? I mean, you do this. You have the same conversations again and again. Why not put it into something a little more structured and repeatable? And I was like, well, and this harkens back to my days in college. Well, I'm not a writer. I'm an engineer. And she's like, yeah, but you've been good at teaching people, individually over email and the phone. Why don't you just do it in a again, in a book format. So needless to say, I got over my doubts and did it. And I was able to pre-sell enough to be able to go to that conference. And that's really the first time it's transitioned from just content I was putting on my blog, on the PlanScope blog at the time, hoping that Google would magically send people who are Googling around for, like, how do I charge more, to an article of mine, which would then get them to sign up for my software. This was the first time that I put something else in that mix, right?
Yeah.
And that eventually, this was about a year and a few months ago, is when I decided, because at that time I had all of my articles that I do each week on the PlanScope blog, which is my software's company blog, which you see a lot of. I mean, you see a lot of these software companies who will do stuff like that. But then I had these courses that were just sitting on their own domain names. And then I had a podcast on BrennanDunn.com. And I'd go on an interview like this. And at the end, the inevitable, where can people find out more about you, question would be asked. And I'd list off like five different things. So I decided at the time to just consolidate every, and it was risky. I was worried about the SEO implications and all that stuff. But I put everything but PlanScope under Double Your Freelancing. And that's where it's been ever since. And it's best business decision I've made in the last few years.
Cool. So, and my next question you kind of got into, but I was going to say, where did you start? I know you had guides. What was your first online course?
So it wasn't a course. I thought of it as a book at the time, and that was Double Your Freelancing Rate.
Yep.
And version one was just a 90 page PDF or something. And that did well. I mean, I priced it at, I think, $49, and it did very well. But then I realized I wanted to do a second version because I had all this data about questions people had, and I'd done a lot of like surveying of customers. And so I filled in the blanks. I added things. I expanded. I totally rewrote the whole thing. So I didn't actually reuse anything from V1 and V2. But I redid it in a way that it was more like a course, where you have a course book, but you also have like 6 hours of video. You have all the templates that I use in my own business for proposals and contracts and everything else that I've used in my business for years. I kind of licensed into the course. And I also added a 2-month email accountability program that would basically just walk people through, you know, section by section, the entire course. So it's kind of like almost like a virtual book club type thing. But at the end of each of these emails would be a link to a worksheet where people could actually apply the theory in the given section to their specific business. So it became more of a course, and I started promoting it as a course. And there's also different tiers, so you could pay more and get a coaching session with me. And that happened, I think, 2.5 years ago, actually, is when V2 came out.
Okay.
And that's by far my most popular course. That's most of my customers are from that.
So one of the things you said, which I want to go back to, is you thought of it as a book at first.
Yes.
What was the catalyst for that switch where you started to think of it as a course?
Well, I think the big thing was just not having the results that I wanted from the book. And it sounds stupid, but, you know, behind me, I have a bunch of books, a bunch of business books. And there are a lot of them that I just haven't read. And I don't really, they're more of like reference guides,
maybe
for one day. But, you know, I haven't really committed to them. Whereas anytime I've done quite a few courses online, I commit to them because, you know, even if they are literally just a PDF chopped up in, or a book chopped up into a bunch of PDFs, or, you know, cramming a book into a membership site or something, I treat them differently. And one of the things I wanted to do too was a course, I think by definition implies some degree of outcome, like a solution being delivered. Whereas a book itself, I mean, a book can be fiction, it can be a biography, it can be a business book. And I mean, there's nothing really inherently prescriptive, I think, about the book as a format, if that makes sense. So I really wanted to do, you know, obviously I wanted to get more success stories, which meant redoing the format. But on top of that, I wanted people who purchased it, became students of it, to actually treat it differently than they would just an ebook.
Gotcha. And what challenges did you encounter when you started out making it into a course?
I mean, the big thing was more, the challenges were mainly internal. It was things like, you know, am I just using it as a course so I can add another figure to the price point? Is it actually a course? Like when I think course, I think college level course, mm-hmm. right? Where I can go and I can talk to the professor and, you know, I have all this other stuff around it. And it didn't really, it doesn't really have that. I mean, there's no, you know, it's somewhere between that definitely, but I doubted myself. I doubted the reception to it. Like, hey, I'm going to announce V2 and the price is, I mean, it wasn't a lot higher, but if they used to pay $49, now at the time it was $199. So now they're paying four times the price. Are people going to balk at that? Yeah. And I had a lot of doubts around that. Obviously they were all overcome when people didn't balk and more success stories came, but you know, before the fact, there were a lot of doubts. There weren't really any external doubts. It wasn't like can I actually technically produce it? No, right. That was never an issue.
Yeah, I love that you shared the internal monologue, which makes sense because, you know, you're a technical guy. So, but I love that you shared that. How did you, you know, this one more question, how did you overcome that? That internal doubting voice?
I've always built in the open. So I wasn't, you know, I didn't go behind a curtain and, you know, just surprise, here's something new. I had done a lot of discussions with people about what I was thinking, how it would be different, how the value would be different in it, and even the pricing. And I talked to both former customers. So these are people who had already paid me something. So their opinion's really high, mm-hmm. Or their opinion's very valuable. I even surveyed a few people who were just general subscribers who had said, I'm interested in a V2. I'm a member of a few mastermind groups of people who are kind of like me, and that, and you know, frankly, just having seen other people do it too.
I mean,
granted, there's always that fine line between internet marketing BS stuff versus something legitimately valuable. And it's hard, I think, when you have a lot of these self-identified online courses that a lot of people, if you go to like, you know, ripoffreports.com or something, you just find all these, you know, horrible stories about them. And so it's kind of like, I don't know, that was one of the fears when I went into ebooks, right? I was like, oh, no one actually buys ebooks and no one actually does an online course. These were a lot of the preconceptions that I had to overcome.
Okay. So we're here to primarily talk about your latest course, Double Your Freelancing Clients. Can you give us an overview of what this course is about?
Yeah. So I think let's start with the format differences. So Double Your Freelancing Rate, as I mentioned, was something I was more comfortable with, which was came out to be about 150 page course book with a lot of case study interviews that I filmed via a webcam and templates and everything else. And it was self-study. It's evergreen, meaning you can go now and buy it and you'll get it immediately and it kicks off and everything else. I wanted to do something a little more high touch, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the big thing, the big difference is format. So with Double Your Freelancing Clients, you know, a lot of people from Double Your Freelancing Rate are like, this is great. Now I know how to sell. Now I know how to write proposals. Now I know how to price myself, but I don't, how do I find the people to do this with, right? Like maybe they'd get referrals, but it would be random and so on. So the market, you know, my market at least, drove me to create something that would be all about how do you systematically acquire high quality clients or leads rather. Because this is something I had to figure out for my agency, because I couldn't, with 100K a month in payroll, I couldn't just wait for a referral. So I wanted to create something new, but I realized that I can give somebody a lot of instruction, but if they don't have a lot of the support that I personally had when I was doing this in my own company, the likelihood that they'll succeed is low. Like double your freelancing rate is about mindset switching, which is easy. But double your freelancing clients requires construction. It requires setting up systems and processes in your company that will help you generate leads. So format-wise, there's 57 videos that I had professionally produced. And it's another thing. I was going to do it all myself. I bought a little DSLR. I was going to figure out how to do Premiere, Adobe Premiere and all that stuff. I eventually got smart and said, you know what? I'm completely like all the advice. If I was coaching somebody, I would say, you're not a video person. Hire somebody who actually gets video to do it for you. So I ended up doing that. What was funny was I was talking to somebody locally who does freelance video editing. And he quoted me like $1,500 or something for what was going to be a 6-hour long video course. And, you know, we were going down that path. And then I got a cold email from a customer of mine, double freelancing rate customer of mine, who pitched me on doing it. And he wanted $22,000. And I ended up hiring him. And the reason I hired him was what he was saying was, look, I'm in your target audience. I'm a freelancer. I also know your style and your work, but most importantly, I'm not just going to be somebody recording film and editing. And then, you know, that's a commodity thing. What I'm going to do is when I'm filming you, if you go on a tangent or you're saying stuff that makes no sense, or, you know, or I'm not just identifying with what you're saying, I'm going to cut you off. So he's basically saying, I'm going to be a director of your video course. And I was like sold. So I hired him, but I also hired mentors. So one of the things that happens now with double your freelancing clients is it's a once a year course. So you can only join it once a year. It's not an evergreen like the other one. And you're assigned a dedicated support person who will host a mastermind that is biweekly, where you show up every 2 weeks and you say, here's what I've been working on, here's what I'm struggling with, and here's what I'm doing next. And they'll work with you to refine, maybe you're writing a positioning statement or new copy on a landing page or whatever. They're there to help you along that path. But also, I'm there. I'm making myself available 2 to 3 times a week in a kind of a live office hours where it's like visiting the professor whenever, you know, up to 2 to 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Where if you, let's say you watch the video on how to rewrite your sales page for your agency, and you're like, well, you know, I do this and I can't really figure out how to apply it to what I do, or I have some questions. You can go and you can actually talk to the person who created the training that you already watched and get specific advice, you know, about what you do and what you need to do. So, you know, I can't read a book and ask the author about like, hey, can you clarify what this means? But in this course, you have basically open access to the author. So really the difference is it's a matter of availability or accessibility rather. Where, you know, yes, I have 57 videos of 6 hours long of all this training content about how to set up the system, but you can actually go and ask the person who was filmed to get specific advice and, you know, tactical input on what you should be doing as it relates to whatever was covered. But on top of that, you also get this person who Brennan, the course creator, has hired to basically help you stay accountable, to help make sure that every 2 weeks you're making some forward progress. And I mean, honestly, like in terms of results, night and day from everything else I've done, because here people are, the format is kind of requiring them to, I mean, it is kind of like a college course where I have teacher assistants who are the mentors who lead these kind of study groups that happen every other week. You have the professor who has office hours every multiple times a week. And then you have the lecturers, which, you know, are kind of, that's the only part that's kind of turnkey. That's pre-recorded, I guess.
Yeah.
But everything else is live. And it's been, I mean, we've got so many things coming out of it, like success stories. It's incredible.
Okay. So who is the ideal learner for the course? I know your audience, you have a lot of designers and software folks. So who's the ideal person for this course?
So I tend to be agnostic when it comes to what it is you do. Like I'm not specific to like this is for designers or anything like that. The only qualification I have is people who sell to businesses. Like if you're a portrait artist or something, it's a little harder because I really push the whole B2B thing.
Yeah.
But in this course specifically, it's people who are basically running off of luck, right? So they're waiting for referrals to come to them. They're not really sure where their next project's going to come from. You know, these are people who don't really have a strategy for getting work. And that's how I started. I mean, I didn't know any better, but that's how I started. But when I had people on payroll where regardless of if they're billing for me or not, I need to pay them, I couldn't say, oh, well, hopefully we get the right amount of clients in October or the right amount of new leads in October. I couldn't depend on that. So this is for people who are kind of in that boat, who, you know, they don't really have a strategy for, and honestly, most freelancers don't. They you know, when they need the work, then they'll go out and pound the pavement, and often make concessions, like go and find crappy clients on Craigslist type, you know, sites or whatever. But no, I mean, this is basically for people who are looking to systematize and even automate how they acquire clients, which is something I had to do with my agency.
Yeah. So you just published a great tell-all article on your blog where you admitted your mistakes in launching Double Your Freelancing Clients. But before we get into that, I want to talk process because, you know, for those listening, if they can't tell already, this course, you put a lot of time and money into it. So first, where did you even start when you sat down to say, okay, I'm going to create this course? How did you start? How did you approach it?
So I approached it by thinking, what outcome did I want somebody to have? So I wanted to know that a year from taking the course, somebody would have a system in place that would kind of work on their behalf, at least partially, to generate leads so that they can spend more time actually billing. Because if you're freelancing, you can't, if you're on the phone with a potential client for an hour, it's an hour you're not billing for. Yeah. So you're losing money there. And so that's the outcome I wanted. I wanted people who could, at the end of the day, have a business that's sustainable, where they have predictable clients coming in, and they ultimately have a backlog of work. You know, they have, like, one of the, actually, I just interviewed Franz this morning over Skype, but he took the first version. He has 8 months of booked work ahead of him, which is nice because he's going to wake up every month for the next few months knowing that he doesn't need to worry about where that work is coming from. So that's the goal, that kind of safety and security, but also that systematic kind of outcome. So that's where I wanted people to get to. And then I just deconstructed that into, well, what's the best way to make that happen? The obvious best way is to just, like, let's say, have me work with individually as a coach with somebody and take their unique business, their unique problems, where they are right now, and so on, and work with them individually. But that doesn't really scale. So the next best thing, I think, is something like what we have now, which is you have all this curriculum, this content, this training. But most importantly, you have people who will say, all right, Janelle, this is where you are right now in your business. This is where you just told me you want to be. Let's put together a roadmap that connects to, and let's have you work over, the, you know, toward that for the next 6 months. So it's a 6 month course. And, you know, that's kind of, I just thought, well, what, you know, if I can't work with people individually and directly transmit, you know, my expertise, my knowledge, and so on, you know, that way, what's the next best thing?
Right.
And that's what I've come up with.
So you started with the outcome and essentially you worked backwards to kind of deconstruct, okay, what does this outcome mean? As far as sitting down and doing the work, creating the content, that's what a lot of people, I think, underestimate, is the amount of work that's involved in creating the content. So do you have any tips or, I don't know, strategies that helped you to just see it through?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easier when you actually know the outcome that you want somebody to have. If you just say, I'm going to create a video course and I don't really know, I think it'll be on like SEO, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And you're just like, I'm going to create an SEO video course. Well, then it gets really hard to figure out, like, you know, well, what does that mean? What should you cover and so on? But if you're like, if you're what I do, which is I know somebody specifically who is right here, right now, at this point in their business, and I know they want to get to this point in their business. How can I help them get there? Then it becomes a lot easier. I mean, it kind of, the curriculum and the content almost write themselves because you know where they are now and where they need to be. And obviously that means understanding your customer, understanding your audience and everything. But I think the worst thing somebody could do is think, I'm going to create a course for the hell of it, and I don't really know what's going to be in it, and I have a loose idea of a topic. I don't really know who it's for. I haven't validated that people actually want to get to this point or want this outcome or whatever else. I mean, if you think of a course as a feature set, I think you're going to run into a lot of mistakes. But if you think of it more as a bridge connecting where somebody is now to where they need to be, it becomes a lot better for you.
Gotcha. So let's get into the mistakes and learning moments. I think it'll be super valuable for everyone listening to learn kind of the back end of the course. So can you give us the lowdown, Brennan? What mistakes were made with DYFC the first time around?
So the first time around when I launched it, and the launch I'm doing now is the second launch, although I have a 1.5, which I'll talk about in a second. The first time, though, I thought that all that had to happen was to give people outlets for help. So they could come and meet with me, or they could go and email their mentor or whatever else. But what I realized is that a lot of people would join, and then if we weren't reaching out to them and basically harassing them, they weren't gonna, like, a lot of these people would not really make an effort. I think what I learned is that a lot of people end up buying thinking that the act of purchasing is them succeeding. And it sounds odd, but it's true. And the thing is, I realized, like, it wasn't getting the success rates that I wanted, because a lot of people would go in and it was like I was giving them this access to a gym and, hey, yeah, the trainers are in the corner over there, but it's up to you to go and seek them out if you need help. And, you know, some people are naturally good at doing that, but a lot of people aren't. So I realized I had to have more structural support, more prescriptive, here's how it works than I was offering before. Just having, like, anytime access isn't enough. There needs to be a better plan. So what I did is the V1 had, the mentorship thing was over email. So you're assigned a mentor and then you can email them whenever you want and they'll help you set goals and everything else. The new model is a live group call with you, your mentor, and a few others who are in your group. And you're with those people for the whole 6 months, and you're required, as part of joining the course, you're required to try to show up to these bi-weekly calls, you know, as much as you're able to. And I've been piloting this with them, and so far it's night and day. I mean, every single person who's in both of these groups, I mean, some of them haven't been able to make it just due to traveling or whatever else, but everyone, each time I meet with them, whether it be individually or as a group, they're making forward progress. They're writing drafts of landing pages, or they're creating case study things, or one person's even outlining an email course. And they're making, each time I meet with them, they're moving closer to the goal, closer to that goal that they uniquely have. So not everyone who joins is at the same place in their business. Some already have an agency, some are just starting out, and everything in between. And because of the format, they're able to work with me individually, and I'm able to see all this forward momentum that I know. I mean, again, we're early, but I know as they continue to build this up, the results are going to be incredible. So I already know, like, another mistake I made was I went into this thinking, okay, the mentors would know how to mentor, and the students would know how to seek out mentorship. And, you know, people are all, you know, everyone can figure that out. I made assumptions, basically, is the mistake I made. So if I could go back, I mean, obviously the format would be what it is now, but most importantly, I would have done a beta run of the course on a very small scale first.
Which is what you're doing now.
Which is what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Right.
So you are, I think, very good at validating. I know for a lot of people starting out with online courses, they can be intimidated by reaching out to people and getting feedback. How do you do it? I mean, what are some strategies that make you so good at getting feedback from people before you launch something?
I mean, so one of the things I do a lot of, like you just mentioned, is I try to have natural touch points for service. So I mentioned I have worksheets that get sent out with my courses. Well, they get a copy, but I get a copy too. Mm. And there's things, I even have a free email course where I do the same thing. I have 12,000 something submissions from that. Just yesterday, I sent an email to my list where I was promoting a new email course. It's basically kind of like a precursor to Double Your Freelancing Clients when that launches. And the first thing I do is I ask people when they join that, what is one thing that you need this, that you want this free email course you just opted into to help you with? And I got 162 responses so far. And all of these have gone into a Google Doc where I've broken it down into pains, desires, problems with branding, problems with scaling, problems with relying only on referrals. And I break all these down in their own words, right? So just copy and pasting whole emails, paragraphs from emails into this doc. And what this is allowing me to do is, even though the pretense here, and it's true, is I'm using this feedback to help me make sure and to validate the email course. Ultimately, though, all of this copy is going to be used to help me sell the big course. Because this is helping me figure out, in their own words, what are the problems. I mean, if you think of yourself as a doctor, right? Listen to your patient and then prescribe based off your expertise and give them the medicine, the solution they're looking for. Mm-hmm. That's why I think the mistake I see people make all the time is this. You get so hung up on the format or the length or, you know, whatever arbitrary thing you want to come up with. And they don't really know, am I actually like solving what needs to be solved? And I mean, honestly, every course, every product I've ever created is really just a direct response to what I've picked up at first by putting my ear to the ground. Like when I didn't have an audience, I would go like I would go to like Reddit or these forums and just look at like, what are the things people keep complaining about? Like, you know, what do people keep getting hung up on? Crappy clients who aren't paying them or whatever else. And this is how I would come up with either, you know, the way I look at my own business now, my own training business is, yeah, part of it's my own experience. You know, yes, I built this successful consultancy and I learned a lot and have a lot to share about that. But the other part is I've gotten really good at researching and asking and talking with people. You know, I've got 32,000 people who I can survey and speak to over Skype and learn a lot from. And now a lot of what I'm doing, like with this new course, is, yeah, it's my own stuff, but it's also reporting on things that I've picked up through just the thousands of data points I've accumulated, I guess, yeah, along the way.
Very cool. So getting into some of those data points and just what you've picked up, got some questions for you. What is the number one piece of advice you could share for anyone listening about creating online products?
I think, again, I've talked to, I know a lot of people in my audience, for instance, who are looking at building products, looking at getting into building their own products, whether they be ebooks, courses, software, whatever else. And the mistake I see people make is when they're focused on the product in isolation, as a product, is this complete or not complete product, that they'll just kind of spin their wheels and they'll never ship it or whatever else, because they're not actually thinking, is my medicine complete enough? Like, can it at least help? Maybe it doesn't help everyone I wanted to help yet, but can it help at least a few people? The biggest thing I think anyone can do is get the biggest turning point, I think, for most of us is when somebody we don't know who we didn't ask for money from pays us.
Yeah.
Because most of us, I mean, whether you're consulting or you have a full-time job, like you issue the invoice or you show up for 40 hours in a week and you get that direct deposit. But when somebody without prompting can send you money and get something delivered to them that has already been created, already is fulfilled immediately, that's the thing that I think separates the people who are going out and seemingly overnight successes from those who aren't, which are the ones who are just, you know, who are looking at themselves as, how can I provide? How can I give? How can I deliver value that outweighs what I'm getting paid.
Right. How can I serve? Got it. Thanks for sharing that. So one thing I've always noticed about you, Brendan, and something that I think shines through in this interview is that you're very analytical and you recognize patterns. And not only do you recognize them, you take action on them. So what patterns do you see with online courses and learning products, for the future?
I think the big thing is kind of one of the things I'm putting into Double Your Freelancing Clients, which is the higher touch, the more accountability, the more directness that it gives you. Like, so historically, if you bought, let's say, a DVD course from somebody or a book or whatever else, there's usually not any form of access. I mean, yeah, maybe you can do like a, maybe there's like a road trip seminar thing that the author will do and come to your town and you can go to it or whatever. But I think the big thing is going to be, the thing I'm noticing is the most successful courses are those that really have built in accountability, built in help, built in support, that are more than just providing content. I mean, it's I mean, honestly, some, and this has happened. People can go and they can take, they can go through Double Your Freelancing Rate and say, okay, I've got a lot of ideas from this and I'm going to repackage it into my own content and sell it. But the core differentiator is it's not just about the physical, or in this case, the digital content. It's about the, it's about bringing, you know, your job as a course creator is to get somebody from here to there. And maybe content can do that. But more often than not, I think the best way to get them there is to have, to go above and beyond that, whether it's like monthly office hours that you do over like a webinar type thing or something like that. I mean, I think that's going to be, that's the thing I'm noticing. That's the big distinction is, okay, is this just a turnkey self-study thing, or is there more, more support, more help baked into it?
Yeah, taking it to the next level. I agree with you. So we're down to the final three questions. First one up, what's next for you and Double Your Freelancing?
So the, I have the portfolio of clients, or not clients, but products, Double Your Freelancing Rate, Double Your Freelancing Clients. They're kind of the yin and yang, the how do I get the leads and then how do I sell them in consulting. I might spin off, I think, I do want to eventually do a proper book. By proper, I mean like either self-published in Amazon or maybe even actually published. That would just be a way to influence and reach more people. Because right now, you know, the cheapest way to kind of buy anything of mine right now is $129 with Double Freelancing Rate at the baseline. But I want to have something a little more, not tactical as much, but more about like kind of a broader, more, I hate the word, but inspirational kind of thing. So I'd love to do a book. I just did my first US conference. I'm going to be doing a European conference at some point. And the US conference did really, really well. So I'm going to do another one also next September. But I think really, I mean, I've got the funnels. I've got the products that deliver consistent value to people. Double Your Freelancing Clients is once a year. Double Your Freelancing Rate is ongoing. And now it's just kind of what I've been working the last few months, which is just increasing the audience, you know, getting more traffic, more people taking my free email courses, getting more value put in the hands of people, and just really doubling down on that.
Yeah, very nice. So where can people find out more about Brendan Dunn?
It's a question I used to have a really bad answer for.
Yeah.
it's really doubleyourfreelancing.com is the best place. If you want a quick, I do have it's a 9-lesson email course. It's all about pricing. If you want to kind of see how I do my funnel, that's at freepricingcourse.com. Or if you want to send me a tweet, I'm at Brennan, B-R-E-N-N-A-N, Dunn, D-U-N-N on Twitter.
Cool. So last question that I ask all of my guests, what's your why? Why do you do all this work, Brennan?
Two whys. First is to obviously, you know, be able to have a great life with my family and friends. But the why of the business in and of itself is ultimately to help people avoid a lot of the mistakes I made. And going into this, you know, I started out as a freelancer knowing nothing about the business side of things. And then I even started an agency without knowing anything about the business side. And I had to learn it all, and I made a lot of costly mistakes, is that like that 100K one I mentioned in the beginning. So really what I've been floored by is just the fact that I can share what I've learned, I can share what I've researched, and it's helped people. Like I get emails a lot from people saying, hey, went through Double Your Freelancing Rate and was able to 3x my pricing, and happy to report, I know we've never talked before, but my fiance and I are getting married a lot sooner than we thought. Here's a picture of us on our honeymoon in Greece, or, you know, whatever. That was one of the emails I got a few months back. And that's the kind of stuff where, you know, I'm not changing the world like Uber or Google or any giant companies to do, but I'm changing the world for a few thousand customers of mine. And it's really humbling, but it's also really, that's the why, I guess, for the business.
I love it. And it's the first time I've gotten two whys, so you just made history on the Zen course.
Look at that.
Thanks so much for the interview, Brendan. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Janelle.
Wasn't that just the best? I am so grateful to Brendan for hanging out with us and sharing his expertise. I hope you got tons of value from it. Once again, if you'd like to learn more about Brendan Dunn, you can find him at doubleyourfreelancing.com. All right, it's time to recap. There were some huge, huge, huge takeaways in this interview. Here's my top three. Number one, access is not enough and purchase is not success. Those were two statements that I thought were just mind-blowingly profound. Access is not enough. Essentially, what I took Brendan to say is that providing people with access to content and even access to you is not enough to make a course successful. It really comes down to how you're structuring your content. But more importantly, are you focusing on identifying the big problem that people are taking your course for? And structuring your content so that it solves that problem. And then, you know, really built into all of that is making sure that you're thinking about outcomes and solving that problem through creating actionable content. It was just mind-blowing. Access is not enough. The second part, purchase is not success. This just struck a nerve for me because I think it applies to people who take courses as well as people who teach courses. If you take a course, which is what Brendan was talking about, paying for that course is not enough. You have to do the work. The purchase is not success. And I think we all need that reminder, right? I know I've been guilty of it. I'm sure there are other people. Buying something is not going to change anything. But the other part of that, which is not talked about enough, in my opinion, is that for those of us who create courses, just because a lot of people buy your course does not necessarily mean that you are being successful in helping them learn. There's structure behind helping people learn. And I think that's something that we all have to remember. So that was number one. Number two, validate that your audience actually wants your course before you create it. So the key statement that I hear in every interview from successful course creators is, I asked my audience what they needed from me. I asked my audience what they wanted. I asked my audience what they would pay for. I can't drive this home enough. It's so key. Before you invest time and energy and money into creating your online course, check in with your people and find out if this is really what they want, because there could be a different need that you haven't thought about, or there could be nuances that you haven't considered. It's so important, and I can't emphasize it enough. But the second part of that, or not really the second part, but what do you do if you have a small audience? I think Brendan touched on it, but we didn't really go into it. So I'll mention it now. And that is, you know, you kind of, and I have an article on this where I talk about what I call recon of going to places like Reddit or blogs where your potential audience would hang out and finding out what people are complaining about. Quora is another great place to do research. Doing that research or reconnaissance to really find out what people are complaining about, even if it's going to, you know, other people, quote unquote, competitors in your niche. Just doing the work and seeing what the real need is before you invest your time, energy, and money into creating a course. Number three, be the medicine. So Brennan had this great analogy of, you know, doctors who prescribe medicine to cure a disease or to help you not have pain in a certain area, and how courses need to do something similar. And that is focusing on what the problem is and how your course can solve it. What is the prescription for solving that pain point? I think that that is such a poignant way of thinking about your course. Really, your course is not, it's not about you, right? When we create courses, it's not about us. It's about the pain that our learners, our customers, our students are having. And our course is really about transformation, getting from that pain point to a solution. How are we going to do that? So those were the three takeaways for me. I hope that you had some insights as well. There was a lot in the interview that definitely was not everything, but those were the ones that stood out. Okay, you can check out the show notes for the links mentioned during this episode by heading over to zencourses.co/018, and you'll find everything in addition to some of the highlights that I didn't talk about a second ago. You'll find some other highlights there, as well as links to get in touch with Brennan and find out what he's doing. Again, that's zencourses.co/018 for episode 18. Last but definitely not least, are you part of the course crew? Yes, that is the official name that I have decided to call all of the amazing people signed up for my mailing list. If you want to stay up to date with the podcast, plus get my weekly articles about creating successful online courses that matter, you've got to get into the course crew. The easiest way to join us is to go to zencourses.co/newsletter and sign up for the newsletter by entering your email address. I'm making some exciting changes very soon, and I'm just saying, my crew will be the first to get early access. So join the Zen Courses family. Go to zencourses.co to sign up. It's super easy. zencourses.co, not .com. All right, it is that time. As always, thanks so much for hanging out with me. I definitely do not take your attention for granted. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I am Janelle Allen, and this has been the Zen Courses Show. Have an amazing day.